does that mercury come from? Where is it going? And what does it mean for you and me here in Wisconsin? I'm Lee Rayburn, and our next guest has been researching mercury in our environment, where we will find it, and what its outcomes might be. If you have questions about the story of mercury in Wisconsin, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Perhaps you've even suffered the symptoms of mercury poisoning, and some have. You can join us as well by emailing talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Marie Perkins, Associate Professor of Wildlife in the College of Natural Resources at UW-Stevens Point. Marie, welcome to the show.
Hi, happy to be here.
I just want to start with, I'll start with what I think I know about mercury, but then when I start thinking about it, I realize I don't think I know very much. Like, I think of where mercury comes from, and we can start there with coming from coal-fired power plants. That's kind of where I've heard it comes from. Is that accurate? And if so, are there other places we find it?
Yeah, coal-burning power plants are one of the main sources of mercury pollution into the environment. Here in Wisconsin and other places around the country, we do have some historic contamination that would have come from pulp and paper mills. And we know that historic deposition into the environment can really last long periods of time. So mercury is really persistent in the environment. So we could still see some, you know, exposure from that historic contamination. There are some natural sources of mercury in the environment. Things like volcanoes can emit mercury. And then another one of the main sources is associated with artisanal gold mining. So this is like small scale gold mining, which is usually illegal. And one of the main things about mercury is that we refer to it as a global pollutant because it can, once it's released into the atmosphere, it can travel really long distances, remain in the atmosphere for 6 months to a year, and be deposited far from the source. So mercury that gets deposited in Wisconsin could be coming from quite far away.
So it would seem like if this is a global pollutant, it would require a global solution. But is that even, do we even have such a thing as global solutions?
Yeah, it is definitely tricky, right? There is currently the Minamata Convention on Mercury, which is an international treaty that aims at reducing mercury in the environment. So I think the current number of countries that are signed on is about 154. And then all of the countries that are part of this convention put together plans on how they're going to reduce mercury emissions into the environment.
Marie, was Minamata, Japan, one of the locations of a real bad mercury poisoning incident? Was that right?
Yes, that's correct. And that's is what the convention is named after. So it is one of the kind of main historic ways that we know about the effects of mercury on people. And I actually went to Minamata, Japan. So I've been there and kind of got a tour around the historic contamination. And basically it was a company that was polluting methylmercury directly into the bay, the Minamata Bay, and then people would fish in that bay and were eating the fish and then being exposed to very high concentrations of methylmercury and having these really high poisoning events or really negative effects from the mercury.
Well, go on about these negative effects, Marie.
Yeah, so mercury is a neurotoxicant, so it negatively affects brain and nervous system development. And this is why one of the reasons why a lot of the exposure regulations focus on children and women of childbearing age, because they're most vulnerable. Developing brains are most vulnerable to the negative effects, and they can have a large array of effects on human brain development. But mercury is bad for everybody, and so it can can also affect adults as well, and can have really large scale effects on pretty much every system of the body.
And your research is not necessarily on human impacts, although you've been to Minamata and you've seen the story firsthand, but you're looking at things like other animals, and I think of fish first and foremost, because I think of mercury getting it from the coal plants into the air and then the water and then the fish, not unlike Minamata, but in lower concentrations. And we've got the DNR warnings about inland waterways with mercury contamination. But what sort of animals do you look into when it comes to mercury intoxication, poisoning, or whatever?
Yeah, my background really focuses on birds. Mm. So you mentioned that, you know, when we think about mercury for human exposure, we think about these fish consumption advisories and people being exposed through eating fish. And that's kind of the main way that people are exposed to mercury. But we have a lot of fish eating wildlife as well. And so wildlife also get exposed to mercury when they're eating fish. So there's been more research looking on wildlife that eat fish and kind of the negative effects and exposures. But my research specifically takes a little bit of a different focus, and I focus more on birds that forage on invertebrates, so insects and mollusks and things. And one of the things that's pretty interesting about this is, one, we have insects that have aquatic life stages, so they can be exposed to mercury within the aquatic system and then emerge into the terrestrial environment. And we do see mercury increases, it biomagnifies through food webs. But we do see that insects also have food webs. And so certain species of insects can have pretty high mercury concentrations, just kind of related to those food web interactions.
Had not thought about that, Marie, that if our birds are, or if our insects are aquatic and we've got mercury in the water, then most likely we've got mercury in our insects. And if we've got birds that are eating invertebrates that are eating from the water, then we are most likely getting mercury in our birds as well. And is that what your research has been finding?
Yes. Oh. Yeah, we do find this. So my research mostly focuses on kind of two ways to look at mercury in birds. And one is to use birds as bioindicators of mercury within the environment. So looking at where across the, many different regions, but we could think about across the state of Wisconsin where we're finding more mercury exposure. And then we also have a concern about the birds. So like humans, birds that are exposed to mercury have negative effects on their health.
Nervous system specifically, or beyond that even?
So they're pretty broad. One of the main areas that's been kind of most studied is looking at reproduction. And so we do see a lot of negative effects on reproduction, and they can kind of come in a whole different variety of ways. So one species that looked at that has been looked at pretty heavily are loons, who are fish eating birds.
No.
I know. And we do see behavioral changes, and maybe they just don't incubate their eggs well, or they don't care for their chicks as well as they should. But across lots of species, we see just, lower hatching survival or lower fledgling survival. So the eggs or the young just are not surviving.
Marie, we've just been talking about the reduction in bird population and all these different ways in which the bird population is threatened. We did not mention heavy metal poisoning among them, but clearly that seems to be a part of this story.
Yeah, absolutely. So we definitely think that there can be population level effects to these contaminants within the environment, and mercury specifically. So of course, as I mentioned, if you're having a lower rate of reproduction, that could absolutely affect the population. One of the things that I, you know, think about when I'm thinking about how the effects of mercury may impact bird populations is it's just this additional stressor that adds to all of the different stressors that these birds are facing. So reduced reproduction, as I mentioned, but some effects have just shown that like song can be affected. So maybe they're just not as good at finding a mate, or there can be some effects on flight. So just all sorts of different ways that they can kind of add to just the difficulty of birds surviving.
Mercury is in our insects, our water, our fish, our birds, and most likely if we're part of the food chain as well, somewhere in us as too. Marie Perkins, our guest, associate professor of wildlife in the College of Natural Resources at UW-Stevens Point. And you're welcome to join our conversation about mercury in Wisconsin at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org. And we'll go to Jeff in Mercer next. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning. First of all, great subject, great topic. The reason I'm calling is I spent about 20 years of my life as a field tech for two different scientists here in Wisconsin. One was Dr. Mike Meyer out of Rhinelander with DNR. The other was Kevin Kino out of USGS those two scientists, and we studied mercury loads in loons, ospreys, as well as eagles, and yes, we did find the studies were published, and they found that it did have both neurological as well as physical effects, as your speaker addressed to. And I just wondered if she's heard of the studies and followed their work, and any feedback she could give me on that. We did find that methylmercury, traces of it can be followed all the way from Indiana and Illinois, so it is airborne. And it is a real wildlife problem.
Jeff, thank you so much for your call and your decades of research. And Marie, are you familiar with some of the work that's led into the work that you're doing now?
Yeah, I am. I've read those papers. They're probably not in the forefront of my mind, as those are not species that I work with. But yeah, I am familiar. There, you all here in Wisconsin, we're quite lucky to have had the researchers that your guest mentioned working on mercury here in the state.
Dr. Mike Meyer and Kevin Keough, if I'm not mistaken. Are those names? Yeah, I think that's what you said, Jeff. And thank you again for sharing your work with us. But some of the species that you have looked at, Marie, in Wisconsin are the red-shouldered hawk and the wood duck. And I would like to know what you found.
Yeah, so we looked at red-shouldered hawk, which are a really interesting raptor species because they do tend to nest in kind of wet forest areas. And so we had some concern that they might be exposed to higher mercury concentrations. They're foraging more on aquatic species, so they like to eat things like frogs and maybe snakes that are associated with these kind of wet forest systems. The research, and we looked here mostly in central Wisconsin, a little bit in northeast Wisconsin. And overall, the concentrations that we were finding were relatively low. The juveniles particularly had really low mercury concentrations, so we were quite happy about that. We didn't have a high sample number for the adults, so I think more research is probably needed there. But overall, the data that we did find indicated that they weren't being exposed to levels that were likely to be, you know, high risk for them. So that was good news for our red-shouldered hawks here in Wisconsin. We had some similar results for our wood ducks. So wood ducks forage on a kind of variety of food, but often foraging on vegetation, which is generally low mercury, and vegetation foraging wildlife are usually at low risk, but they do start to eat invertebrates during the breeding season and feed them to their, and their young tend to eat a lot of invertebrates. So we were certainly interested in what their mercury concentrations might be. There have been some other studies in other locations that have shown wood ducks with higher mercury concentrations. But again, here in central Wisconsin, the concentrations that we found were relatively low and in the range that we were not likely to be concerned about negative effects.
Those results surprise you, especially considering you mentioned one of the reasons we have some mercury in our environment in Wisconsin is because of the pulp and paper mills that would be in central Wisconsin. So did these results, it sounds like good news by and large from what you looked at, the red-shouldered hawk and the wood duck. Did this surprise you at all, Marie?
Yeah, we were a little surprised. We always feel bad when we find results that are good for our animals, but less exciting for us. But we were quite happy that to find those results. But I did expect to find I think there was a possibility that we could find higher levels, especially as some other studies elsewhere had shown higher concentrations. And like you said, we know there is mercury contamination in our, systems here in Wisconsin.
And we're still using coal-fired power plants to this day in some places. So in Wisconsin, it's still part of our energy infrastructure. But not as much as we used to. So do you, Marie, have any perspective on historically where your results most recently stand with mercury poisoning or mercury contamination in our wildlife, in our waterways, compared to recent or past history?
Yeah, here in Wisconsin, I don't have specific knowledge. I did a little bit of sleuthing before coming on just to get a feel for the broader state of Wisconsin. And it does look like overall we've been seeing some declines as we've had more regulations on coal burning power plants. And like I said, as those, historic, further away from those historic pollution. But I have done some long-term historic studies in the Northeast, looking at a variety of different songbirds, using museum specimens, so specimens collected up to 150 years ago. And we did find for all of those songbird species we looked at increasing mercury over time with some variability depending on the species and kind of the data set that we had. We had kind of expected to see a decline in more recent concentrations because there have been a lot of regulations put in place across the nation. But overall, we were still seeing mercury increasing in those species.
So you went to these natural history collections, you went back and tested some of these birds for mercury contamination, and you found that that level has gone up over time, and you did not see a reduction, at least from the museum collections?
Correct. We had a combination of museum-collected individuals and then birds collected in the wild more recently.
Okay.
And we were able to kind of look at the trend over time, and overall we're seeing increases in exposures.
So we started this conversation, Marie, talking about how this was a global pollutant, that it gets airborne and there are no barriers or boundaries to it. But when we ask about local solutions or what we can do in Wisconsin, what would you say?
Oh, that is a really tough one. one of the issues, of course, as I mentioned before, is that mercury is persistent. So once it's in the environment, it can last a long time. It can also be re-emitted back into the atmosphere and moved around. Certainly having more regulations on coal burning power plants and reducing our Use of coal is certainly a way that can help. We do find that even though we have this, you know, once it's up in the atmosphere, it can move. We do see that mercury concentrations can be higher, closer to coal burning power plants in general. One of the other ways that mercury can get kind of removed from the system is it can get buried into sediments. But if we go in and disturb those sediments, then they can get redistributed within our aquatic systems. So some like caution associated with activities that can disturb sediments within water bodies can, you know, also be a good idea.
I've seen this in the past when I lived out in New York. There were questions about dredging. There was a story of Onondaga Lake and that you can't actually upset the dredging. You can't do it and you can't upset the bottom of the lake because if you do, you'd be unleashing all these heavy metals from our old industrial era.
Yep, exactly.
When you mentioned the pulp and paper mills, where was the mercury contaminants coming from there? What was the process that led to mercury in our environment as a result?
So I'm not as familiar with kind of the system behind how historic pulp and paper mills worked, but it seems like it's related to at least in some part to bleaching process. But I that's a bit outside my area of expertise.
That's not anything that we're doing today, as you understand it, is it?
As I understand it, that's been mercury's been removed from that system, and we have removed mercury from many of our industrial processes, but certainly not all of them.
Marie, where does your research take you next? What are you looking for in the future with your work on this contaminant?
That's a good question. I'm not really sure.
What questions do you still have about mercury?
I think it's really interesting, even though mercury is a contaminant that we've known about for many, many decades, it's just has such a kind of unique makeup and unique way that it cycles through the environment and how it cycles through like an individual body or a bird, that there's lots of questions out there. One of the kind of local for me here in Stevens Point area of interest, I'd like to look at what's happening with our kind of tree swallow population. Tree swallows tend to be a good species to study mercury in because they like to forage on aquatic invertebrates that have emerged. So not eating them from the water, but once they emerge into the terrestrial environment, they eat a lot of insects and then they nest in nest boxes, which make them easier to capture and sample. So that is a species I have a lot of interest in, especially here in Stevens Point, where we've got, you know, both the Wisconsin River and the Little Plover River nearby, and kind of seeing how, what types of exposures we're seeing, and then if we can link those to any negative health effects.
It would be interesting to find out. We just talked last hour about swallows that fell from the sky in mass as a result of some of the forest fire smoke that we've seen. So there's all these canaries in our coal mine, Marie, that seem to be able to tell us, or at least become, as you refer to them, bioindicators of the pollutants in our environment.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to thank you for your research and sharing it with us and explaining it in a way that I can understand it, because I when I started to think about it, I really realized that I knew very little about mercury in our environment, and yet I'd seen an awful lot. I've seen stories of people with mercury poisoning, but you can, and really quick here, you can overcome mercury poisoning or you can recover from it if it's not too toxic. Is that correct?
Yeah, humans are not terrible at excreting mercury. So birds are not great at it, but humans do excrete mercury, so they can excrete it through their hair and other ways. And there are some medical interventions that we have that can help to remove mercury from the body. So generally, you know, the amount of mercury contamination, just, you know, not talking about these
right minimata
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not talking about those types. Generally, they're not going to be so high that it's going to be like deadly.
Marie, I want to thank you. We are out of time. Marie Perkins from the UW Stevens Point.